Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Jazz?
Really good, David. Excited to be on the show once again. We've got another interesting topic today. Do you want to tell our listeners what the topic is?
Well, look, today we'll be talking a bit about money concept in comparison of asset rich versus cash rich. And I think it's one of those topics that is quite fundamental in terms of wealth creation gain. And I know that unfortunately in our teaching system, schools don't quite teach about money concepts. And that's why I thought, Jazz and I can potentially give our listeners a bit of idea on that. And Jazz, would you agree?
Definitely. That's what this podcast is about. We are the new teachers of the finance world. But just quickly, yeah. David, for our listeners who are completely new into this game or who are just starting out, what does asset rich actually means compared to cash rich before we dig more deep into it?
Yeah, so I think assets, this is where fundamentally you've got to step back a little in terms of looking at the definition of an asset. So an asset is something that you own, essentially, like a house, like a share or equity or anything that is essentially giving you your value that you own. So that to me is an asset in comparison with liability, which on the other side is what you owe. Let's say, for example, if you've got a loan or if you've got credit card debt, something that you owe to other people, that's a liability. So assets is on the other side. It's what you own, essentially. So when we say asset rich, we'd be looking like, for example, people who's got a good property portfolio with lots of equity, we will call that asset rich, or share portfolio, got a good dividend income stream, that's also asset rich. In fact, as a matter of fact, I would say cash to an extent is also an asset. Asset. Jess, what do you say?
Well, cash, you're right, to some extent is an asset, but the purpose of this podcast today, which we were just discussing before, David, before jumping onto the show, was the cash, which is essentially cash is, if you've got cash sitting in your bank account, then you're cash rich, right? But our definition of cash rich, I think over here, is people who are on really good salaries or wages, maybe towards the higher bracket even, which is the top 47% tax bracket. They are earning that hefty money of whatever $200,000 or $300,000 a year or $1 million a year, whatever that amount is, right? I think the tax bracket says once you're over $180,000, then you're in the top tier, unless it's changed recently, which I don't think so. But they are cash rich people in the sense that their cash flow is really good because their salaries are pretty high, right? So the purpose of today's episode was basically to differentiate between how it's important to be not only just cash rich, but also asset rich, and why it can lead to some issues down the line when you're close to your retirement if you don't have many assets backing you, because the job that you're doing or the business that you're running is either going to get sold out or you're going to retire from your workplace, and then your salary, the high wages that you're earning are gone, but you're not backed by assets much, which is what you just mentioned before, whether it's property or shares, whatever that is, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's something that's basically looking at while we're young and we still got all our energy and we're able to work long hours in order to earn the cash, that's an income that we had to trade. Whereas, as we get older and grow older and we want to spend less time working, in other words, spending less time trading for money, we want to be able to use another mechanism. In this case, we can build up an asset base in order to generate that revenue so we don't have to be locked into work in order to trade time for money.
Yeah, definitely. And not everyone is the same, David, but in our profession, we have seen this a lot of times where people are really cash rich in terms of that their salaries are really high paying, but they are actually not really thinking about investing at all because they're probably so busy with their family and work life being on a higher positions that they totally tend to forget to some extent that they're not going to be able to retire on this money. This money is only there till the time they're working. Once they free up their time, they're close to the retirement, if they don't have any assets to back themselves, then you can, unless they're super, but super, there's only so much contributions that are made, you can lead yourself into trouble pretty quickly.
That's right. And I totally agree with that. I've seen a lot of of, when I used to work in KPMG, it's all about, the more money that you can make. But I think the challenge here is, what are you doing with those money? Are you actually putting them away, or are you just spending them? As your income increases, your spending also increases. That's the common trend that I'm seeing. I don't know about you, Chaz. Are you seeing that trend?
No, surely. It's as the income increases, people tend to increase their expenses pretty quickly, which I guess it's they're adapting to the lifestyle. But what we need to do is really think about, we have got an income salary as of, let's say, 10, 15, 20%, whatever the amount is. How we can, we were already surviving with the current salary, whatever that salary was. Now, how we can actually put a little bit of this money aside to help build our investment portfolio of shares or property, whatever that is. And that really doesn't mean, especially if you're in the higher tax bracket, it doesn't really mean that you're actually cutting down on your lifestyle. It just means putting a little bit of that extra money away so it can lead you better returns while you are still working and earning your current good salaries, in a way, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think I was reading a book the other day, and I remember that seeing that one of the suggestions, I hope that this helps our listeners, is that when you get a salary increase, the suggestion that they had in the book is essentially put 50% of that extra increase away. So, maybe let's say, for example, you can do an automatic transfer as, say, for example, the additional increase is $200 every fortnight. How about you put $100 set as an automatic transfer from one of your bank accounts to another bank account that you can use for savings? And then the rest of the $100 you've earned, yes, you can use that for your extra lifestyle income. But while you enjoy the extra income that's bringing you, you also, in your back of your mind, you know that you are putting away 50% of your extra earned money into your savings or another savings account, which later on you can use to purchase assets and grow your asset base for retirement.
I think you articulated that really well, mate. I mean, that's what this whole thing is about. And the best part is, you only have to do it for the first, and this is first-hand experience, David, between both you and I, we have done this. You only have to do that for the first one or two properties, right? If you're investing in the property. Once you have done that, and if you have done it right, you'll be able to release the equity to buy the future ones without even salary sacrificing your salary. Do it for a couple of years or for the first one or two properties, and after that, off you go. You have built your portfolio, which is sustaining itself, but you're still enjoying now the cash flow that you're earning from your job or business, whatever it is.
Yeah, and the beauty about that is, when you that's essentially before you get the first extra payment, because your lifestyle hasn't changed yet. So therefore, to that extent, when you put away 50% of that, for example, then it doesn't really give you any differences. I think in my opinion, let's say if you can put away that $100, and it really just comes down to a habit. When you initially set it up, and then every time when it comes in automatic, it gets transferred, you might not even realize that you actually have this chugging along in the background. And then 6 months down the track, you'll be amazed at how quickly you're able to save up that first fund in order to start your investing journey.
Surely, and not to forget the benefits, the tax benefits that you get down the line, although that's not the cake, that's just the icing on the cake, but that also helps quite a lot. If you have built a significant portfolio, let's say you have passed 3 or 4 properties, that amount adds up very quickly, which means you don't even have to worry about savings at all. That tax return, in fact, to some extent, becomes a bonus in itself to enjoy your life, but you don't need to salary sacrifice your salary money anymore to be able to build that portfolio, because you did that at the very start, and now it's just sustaining itself by releasing equity and buying new stuff.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it just, to me, yes, definitely, you know, the equity will kick in, as Jazz mentioned earlier. And I think most of the time what I'm seeing is once customer gets into that kind of routine, they'll actually continue doing it in the back end as well. So imagine that you have both the savings and equity as the initial deposit for your next investment purchases. That is going to snowball very, very quickly and gives you that extra boost in order to build your property portfolio in a shorter period of time. So never underestimate the power of habit, I think is one of the things that I would highly suggest.
Yep. And this is not just for the, we talked about the top tier income earners, but this is not just purely meant for them. Doesn't matter what income bracket you're in, we just tend to see this more in the top tier space where people are enjoying the hefty salaries and they're busy with their work and professional life, so they don't get much time to think or talk about investments, and they are the ones who actually are running behind on wealth creation compared to people who are actually on lower salaries because they're concerned about their future. So they actually tend to invest a little bit more and save that money.
Yeah, no, 100%. And look, you know, one of the main things is you know, cash actually loses value over time as well. So, you know, let's say some people might say, okay, well, look, you know, I want to just keep the savings. I just want to keep the savings, and, you know, it gives me 2-3% interest every year. I know it's very little, but, you know, it's still, when I keep saving every year, it may still be a significant amount over the long term. But I think the issue here is cash loses value over time. Don't you agree, Jazz?
No, and that's actually a really, really good point, because if we looked at the last 5 years, not 2018, from 2012 or 2013 till 2017, if you had cash sitting in the bank and property prices, they pretty much doubled in some parts of the Australia in the last 5 years, you already lost money on cash if you had that money sitting in the bank at 4% or 3% or whatever the 5%, whatever the interest rate is. It's very important. Cash sitting in the bank actually is probably the worst investment that you can ever make, to be honest.
And I also want to add that the way that it loses value is because of the fact that inflation keeps going up. So as a good example, you know, that my mentor used to tell me is, you know, a bottle of Coke, let's say for example, Jazz, when we initially in back in 10 years ago, a bottle of Coke is probably what, $1?
Yeah.
And, you know, like fast forwarding to today, a bottle of Coke now probably costs $2.50. So, you know, even though it's the same commodity, but at that point in time, it's only costing $1. And due to inflation over the years, now you need to pay $2.50 in order to get the same commodity. So in that sense, that's why money keeps losing value over the long term, just because of that inflation.
Surely. And the thing is, and I have never seen, David, I don't know whether you agree to this or not, but I've never seen salaries really catching up to a point where ever in our lifetime we'll be able to see that the house prices are actually affordable at salaries. It's always going to be a little bit of a challenge to come up with the first deposit to buy your investment property or whatever it is. But the whole reason for that is because the salary increases are relatively less, and the inflation, especially in the property space and in general, compared to the salary rises, is a bit more. In property space, it's especially a lot more, and shares as well. It's the same thing.
Yeah, totally. And look, you know, and I agree with you there. Based on past experience and just talking about my personal perspective as well, the salary increase never catches up to the way how inflation works, especially in the current environment as well. I think based on where we are in 2019 at the moment, yes, the employment is good. The unemployment rate is low. But having said that, the wage growth, according to ABS, I think is actually the low part. There's not much wage growth at all. So if, let's say today, if you want to get a salary rise with your bosses, it may be challenging depending on what you're doing and your occupation today. So, you know, like, never expect your wage to be in line with inflation growth. And that's where you need some other assets in order to keep that going.
Surely. So a couple of good things about releasing some of your cash that you spend on discretionary things to build a portfolio. Some of the benefits are obviously you'll get some tax benefits if you invest. So that's not the cake. That's the icing on the cake. Then you've got is the you actually are buying the asset, or whether it's share or property, the wealth growth that will happen in that space. And I think in one of the previous episodes, David, you even did discuss the stats of how much the prices have gone up since the last 10 or 20 years. I think it was for the last 20 years, and Melbourne was up by
300%.
So for the majority, it's fair to say that we haven't seen a salary rise of 300% since, right?
No.
So it's just almost impossible to catch up. So tax benefits, you end up building your wealth through property or other asset classes like shares. And then, like you said before, inflation is another important thing that you, if you've got money sitting in the bank account, you probably are gonna, you're probably actually losing that money at a, or the money is depreciating at a faster rate, just purely because of the nature of the economic policy and the monetary and the physical, the way the economy runs and other factors. So there are some clear benefits to release some of your cash, salary cash, if you're earning a good salary. Or as I said before, you don't have to be in the top bracket for this, but there are some clearly good benefits. And the best part is it actually gets you out of the rat race quicker than the others. When I say the rat race, David, what we mean by that is that rather than going slogging yourself to work 9 to 5 every day till the age of 70 just to have that cash, so it really helps you get out of that rat race to some extent.
Oh, that's right. And then I think, you know, majority of people getting into purchasing assets or building an asset base is ultimately, like I said before, looking to trade, looking not to trade time with money. So they want to be able to free up that time to do things that they want rather than going to work. And that's what Jazz mean by 9 to 5, as in, like, you have to be there from 9 to 5 to work. So the idea of that building that asset base is, you know, that asset base will produce enough income to support your lifestyle, at least to a degree that you may not necessarily have to work full time. Ideally, yes, you know, you can literally quit the job and then just live the life that you wanted to and do things that you wanted to in life.
And we probably are a perfect example of that. We both were in the IT industry before being in the finance space, but it's just because property and finance was sort of passion of ours. The equity that we, or the wealth that we created through property, helped us to give up those hefty paying jobs and be able to do what we wanted to do, which is become finance and property strategists, mortgage brokers, to help other clients and plus enjoy the lifestyle at the same time. Do what you want to do. So trade, you don't have to trade your time for things that you don't want to do. It's you'll be doing what you enjoy, and you'll care less about what money you're earning because you know you have got asset backing.
That's right. And look, you know, one thing I want to stress is that, you know, the asset base doesn't get built up overnight. So I think one of the things that people get lured into is, you know, building wealth quickly, or, you know, overnight riches to that extent. And I know, Jazz, I don't know about you, but for me, you know, it took a long time to actually get there. So, you know, like, I think we both spoke about our property journey a little bit. My first one was back in 2010, and it's almost been 9 years now. So it does take time to build up a significant asset base. So that is for you to be able to get some of your time back. So I guess, you know, what I'm trying to say there is, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. Don't expect to go out there and buy, you know, let's say, for example, 5 investment properties and then expect in 1 year time be able to retire off. Unfortunately, that doesn't work. It is something that you will need to continue building and continue paying off the debt. And then, you know, over time, and that's where compounding comes in as well, as the property price grows and also as your debt level decreases, that is when the real income and wealth creation game really kicks in.
Definitely, and that's why we did one of the episodes that we did, which was investing in 20s versus 30s versus 40s, the benefits that you get if you start early. That was the whole purpose of doing that. If anyone is showing you a magic stick to get rich by investing in property within a year or 3 years or 4 years in a short time frame, short to medium, both David and I can pretty much guarantee, without even talking to the person blindly, and I'm happy to even take a bet, that we probably should be running away from these people.
Run as fast as you can.
Yeah. So this is not a quick get quick rich scheme. It's more of putting the right parameters, principles in place of investing, so you can actually think about retiring in next 10, 15 years? And as David said before, like David started his journey in 2010, you said, David, right?
Yeah.
I started it in 2008, so pretty close to when David did. But it took us that long to just get to this point and build up that knowledge. And now it's just sort of become a passion of ours to be able to help others and be in this industry of ever-changing regulations.
Yep, 100%. And yeah, so it takes time. There's certainly aspects that you can, you know, aspects and techniques that you can try to improve and boost your equity, which, you know, I'm sure Jazz will be one of the later topics that we'll cover. But, you know, like traditionally, the asset base does take a while to actually get to that point where you can fully retire. But I think the key here, the key message to take away is, you know, definitely start thinking about building your asset base, because that's going to be your retirement nest egg in order to help you, in order to fund your retirement. Apart from superannuation, which, by the way, I think I looked it up the other day, the superannuation on average, I think it's like for singles, it's like what, $20,000 or $30,000 that you get paid after, like you'll be able to spend about $20,000 or $30,000 a year after you retire, which means there's actually not a lot of superannuation that's going to last you once you retire. And that's why it's important to be able to think ahead and say, okay, well, you know, like, do you really want to be living on that bare minimum lifestyle? Because I don't think anyone wants to. You know, if you are making an income today, well, that's not an issue because you're trading your time and you've got money, and then you can live the kind of lifestyle. But what happens if someone cuts off that income stream for you and you only get left with super, which doesn't increase over time, it only decreases as you continue eating to that super? So that's why it's so important to be able to have that extra leg of asset base to be able to help you, so that you don't just look at your super as you retire, look at your super and it keeps going down every day, but you also got the asset base which still continues to give you that extra revenue and generate that income so that you can sustain that your lifestyle as is.
Yeah, no, that's another good point on superannuation. I wish I had the stats in front of me, but I read an article in AFR, this is probably a few months ago now, where majority of the Australians actually won't be able to retire on super that easily. They'll need some sort of other support, whether it's from their kids or whether from the government, but they'll need other supports. If you're doing minimum contributions and the average salary in Victoria or in New South Wales is close to 70K, 70-75K, that number is probably the highest side I'm talking about, then there's no chance you'll be able to build enough balance in the super to be able to retire. And that's another reason to think about investing in some asset categories, especially at that age when you're not really in a headspace of working for long hours, and plus your body starts to give up, you are tired, you get tired quickly, and you want to spend more time with your kids
and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you've got kids, grandkids who you want to spend more time with. It's just not that practical. Your skill set sort of gets out of date. Not that it happens for everyone, but people tend to go into a more relaxation mode at that age, which is why you don't want to have all this stress and you want to be prepared for it now.
That's right. And I think the other way that I look at it is, you know, like at the moment it's, what, 67 year old that you can actually tap into your super, I think for my generation that is. I don't know, in 10, 20 years' time, they may lift that. Again, I know previously it was 65. Now it's been lifted to 67. In 10, 20 years, they might have to lift it again to 70.
I think,
you know, by the time I retire, it might be even 75.
I think it's pretty safe to say super is a scam. You're going to never get it. You know, we will never get it. Now, this is not a financial advice, by the way. This is more of a joke. I personally don't like super, but that's just me. People do invest heavily in super. So that's just my personal thoughts on super. I don't like this idea of, I think if the money was in my hands, I'll do a better job at it.
Yeah, look, and that's why, you know, like there's super, SMSF, super superannuation management fund, isn't it? That you can actually look in tapping into. But I mean, that's a separate story here. And look, you know, I agree with you. I think to that extent, I'm not even relying on my super. I know that's there and I look at the balances, but then again, I say, I actually excluded from my personal asset base at this point in time. I said, I'm not going to rely on that money because potentially I may not even see it myself. Now, what can I do in order to grow an asset base quick enough so that I can decide how I want to live my life during retirement? Sure. I think that's the way how I look at it, rather than go, yes, I know I will have a super and I'm just going to rely on it. You know, change your mindset, tweak your mindset a little bit to say, okay, well, what happens if that super is not tappable? What happens if it's not available? You know, you might be thinking pension, but again, you know, like that's one of the things. Pension is a given in Australia, and anything could change. What happens if pension also gets taken away? Then what's going to happen? Yeah. You know, what will you be living on? So to that extent, that's why I said, well, look, you know, we definitely need to start taking action now. We need to start growing our asset base. We need to fit long-term and how we can make sure that, you know, everyone can care for themselves as we grow older.
Yeah, definitely. And by no means we are trying to scare anyone that they won't be able to retire on super or anything. It's just more of making people aware of what's happening in the finance world and how they can tackle and control and put right things in place, which after which they won't have to probably worry about all this stuff. And investments hopefully will just keep growing. So that's pretty solid, David. I think we've covered some of the good points over there, which is tax benefits, superannuation, SMSF, self-managed super fund is a topic in itself. We'll discuss, as you said, we'll discuss it in a separate episode sometime.
Yeah.
We have discussed the growth that you get through assets, and the only other thing I guess is probably again, if you are in spending money more towards appreciating asset versus depreciating assets, and I think we covered this up in the previous episode as well. Banks also look at that more favorably, and they tend to march more towards these kind of investors. So that was another good episode. If you enjoying the content, don't forget to give us the 5-star rating. It will be really good to be on top of the list and keep on helping our listeners and bring more good content. That's pretty much it. See you all. Jazz and David. Bye.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.